Hi, Monk Podcast listeners. The following is a sample of the Monk Members Only Podcast. To access the full-length edition of this episode and all of our regular Monk Members Only Podcasts, go to our website, www.monkdebates.com, and register for membership. Membership is free, and it's available for you right now at www.monkdebates.com. Hope you enjoy the program. Hello, Monk members. Rudyard Griffiths here, your host and moderator. Welcome to this, our weekly Monk Members Only podcast. This is the program where we provide you exclusively with a look at the week that was. We dive into the big stories, issues, and ideas in the news to hopefully unpack some original analysis and insights that you can use to understand the world as we find it today. And as our guide in all of these conversations, we're exceedingly fortunate to have on the program Janice Gross Stein. She's the founding director of the Monk School of Global Affairs, internationally best-selling author, acclaimed scholar. Janice, terrific to be in dialogue with you once again.
Great to be here, Rudyard, and what a week this was.
It is, Janice. And, you know, with this program, it's interesting because we always kind of think to ourselves, oh, no, on Monday, what are we going to talk about on Friday? And then when Friday rolls around and you and I start emailing the day before, and it's triage. There's so many issues. I don't know. Am I wrong? You always have to be careful about what's that kind of word, exceptionalism, that you think that the moment that you live in historically is so different than every other moment. But there is this feeling that just everything is changing so fast.
Yeah. I think it is an exceptional moment. You know, it's exceptional to have the pandemic that we had. We haven't had one like that for 100 years. China took 200 years to recover its position in the world, which it has now recovered. That's an exceptional moment, right? So wherever you look, whether you look at politics, you look at sport, you look at health, we really are living in exceptional times. And you put your finger on it, Rudyard, it's the pace of change. It's sped up. We're all speeded up all the time. And I think that's what we're feeling.
Yeah, well, thank you for helping me try to cope with the information flow and sort out what's actually important and what's not. And you mentioned sport, and that's where I want to begin, Janice, because we're all tuning into the Olympics this week. And I got to say, I really appreciate watching the athletes, seeing the dedication to their sport, the spirit of competitiveness. But there's a, I don't know, just a strange kind of mood. Debbie Downer, if you can say that, over these Olympics. And I don't know what's driving it. What am I wrong? Is this my misperception? There's a kind of pall over Japan in these games.
I think you're absolutely right, and it really is puzzling. And I think it emanates from Japan. It's almost like it's seeping through the broadcast airwaves. And why do I think that, Rudyard? Baseball came back last year, empty stands. We had hockey for a long time, nobody, and basketball came back with no fans in the stands. Now, it's true those are all professional sports. Soccer. We were overjoyed just to watch the games. So I don't think it's, although it's eerie in huge complexes not to have fans watching, I don't think that fully explains what I call these joyless Olympics. These Olympics are without joy. Now, let me put in brackets, there have been fantastic performances by women in this first week. And so there's lots of celebration of these great women, especially in Canada. But they really are joyless. A big part of this is that there is growing infection rate in Tokyo. So you have this feeling that they're cocooned off, the athletes. It's barely under control because there have been some cases. But what is really not under control is COVID in the city of Tokyo. and there's worry about exploding numbers. So there's almost two Japans. There's the Japan that's going through the formalities and celebrating that it finally got the games back. And then there's Japan that is in face of a grim reality, which it really has not been able to control. It has not done as well. And this is an Asian story that we don't talk enough about, Rudyard. It has not done as well in vaccinating its population. Very low numbers, and we're seeing around the world. Somebody 2 days ago declared the official start of the fourth wave in some part of the world. So it's not that the Delta variant is not hugely contagious. It is. But we're seeing a big difference between the number of cases on the one hand in vaccinated countries and the number of hospitalizations. And the people in hospital, for instance, in North America, overwhelmingly unvaccinated people. So we call this the epidemic, the wave of the unvaccinated, certainly in North America. In Japan, the numbers are so low. They are could be in front of a brutal wave that could really begin to grow exponentially.
Yeah, and without the vaccination rates in the background, you have the risk of your hospital situation getting overwhelmed. My take on the Olympics this week was really the Simone Biles kind of moment to me was more than just, I think, an athlete in an admirable way acknowledging their mental health and how that was impacting their ability to compete. I think in some ways it was maybe even more than just symbolic of the world's kind of exhaustion and the mental fatigue so many of us have felt and experienced over these last 16 plus months as a result of the pandemic, that there's a, you know, there's something that's happened in our culture, and we don't talk about mental health a lot. We're starting to do a better job in our society. I think Simone Biles did an amazing thing in terms of Japan, where it's about the last thing they talk about.
Yes.
You know, I think we all have to acknowledge that, you know, there has been some trauma here. Beyond the deaths, there has been low-level stress that people have been operating under now for months. And that is bubbling up in ways. And I think it's partly responsible for that feeling. Again, I think you hit the nail on the head, a kind of a zeitgeist of kind of joylessness around these games. And I think Simone Biles' withdrawal is kind of emblematic of a withdrawal that a lot of us are feeling and maybe wanting to make. Yeah. We're tired. We're tired of this. We're tired of the stress of it. We're tired of everything else in life, which hasn't gone away. You know, responsibilities to family, to work. It's a lot. I think we're all feeling.
Yeah. I think that's so right, Rudyard, and of course, Naomi Osaka, who is a Japanese star, tennis star, essentially did the same thing as she was defeated, but she also said, enough is enough is enough. Enough of this grueling competition for which you sacrifice everything. I'm going to put my mental health first before these grueling rituals of competition. So I think that is what Simone Biles did, and is not a passing moment. It's putting a period and saying, we're not going to go the limit. I think there's a third piece to this, which is interesting, which is where Japan is. Japan has had an exhausting 30 years of stagnation.
Yeah.
Think back the last real episode of declinism we had in the United States. Was in the 1980s, and Americans were convinced that the Japanese industrial model was going to triumph and it was going to eat their lunch. And we had a lot of the same conversations going on then that we now have in the United States, certainly with respect to China. And then Japan starts what could only be described charitably as 30 years of secular stagnation and a rapidly aging population. They are the oldest country in the world. So if you're looking for dancing in the streets and joy, it's especially hard to find it in a geriatric Japan. But that aging Japan is part of the reason for the stagnation. Mm-hmm. You know, they have very few young people who have to work. If you're tired, Rudyard, they're even more tired because they have to work triply hard because they're, relatively speaking, the proportion of younger people to older people is so small. And, you know, to play to one of your favorite themes, the Japanese have debt financed mm-hmm. 4 years and it hasn't broken. The deflation and the stagnation yeah. and the feeling that they cannot work their way out of it. So when, and I think that's a big part, this is not the Japan mm-hmm. of earlier times where there was optimism about the future. And I cannot resist saying every time you go after the central bankers for their fecklessness and responsibility, we can now say, yeah, but Japan didn't get at it early enough. Or big enough and stagnated and has lived in a deflationary economy.
Or some people would say all that debt, all that QE, all the manipulation of asset prices has led is what is creating and has reaffirmed a stagnant Japan. But let's leave that debate to another day because you mentioned China and that's where I want to go next. You've been listening to a sample of the Monk Members Only podcast. To access the rest of the episode, consider becoming a member. Membership is free and available at www.monkdebates.com. Once you've joined as a member, go to your membership profile to access the rest of this episode and all of our Monk Members podcasts. Thanks for listening.